positive.
Good evening. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening, and it's time for ABD Guidebook DJ Gold. It's the ABD Guidebook by EJ Gold. And we're entering into yet a new phase tonight. We've been through books 1 through 4, and now we're going to be introduced to book 5. So I would suggest that you get that book out in front of you, you be ready, you work, and you're going to notice the effort that's gone into this, and we will meet it with a like kind of attention. That's what we will put into it. And so we want to thank the group that's going to, that has prepared for book number 5, and now I think I'd like to turn it over to Pat.
Thank you. We are, according to one of our members, a well-oiled machine, and that is something that can be extremely useful when you are trying to work with your human biological machine in a special way. And we have a special presentation tonight, and I just want you to know that, as always, I wish this to be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere. The reading of the 5th book of the dead, called the Book of As-Salam.
Verse 1. I am he whose essence and attributes are free from all imperfection and deficiency. I am capable of action, and my actions are free from any taint of evil or error.
Verse 2. And my being is the perfect, unobstructed, and uncontested state of being in existence. I have none to oppose me, not even an absolute evil.
Verse 3. For there can be no opposition, nor is there imperfection of action resulting from reaction. I meet no resistance, find nothing to bind me, encounter no friction. I am without bounds, without limits, perfect in action and complete in myself.
Verse 4. And so, this is the instruction for the second day of apparition caused by the breaking apart of the 5 primal elements of consciousness.
Could you do that again? A little louder than the other.
Sorry, did that come through?
No.
I'm sorry that I can't hear what you said.
Verse 4.
Read verse 4 again.
Okay, thank you. Verse 4, and so this is the instruction for the second day of apparition caused by the breaking apart of the 5 primal elements of consciousness.
Verse 5, and if in spite of the direct confrontation, so far given, through the power of attachment to the things of the world of matter, you responded with anger or fear, the the bright blue light, or you have become overwhelmed by the illusion of the transit world, there shall be further tests of your courage and endurance.
Verse 6. And on this day, the element of pure form will appear to you within your guide and as your guide, and it shall shine white and luminous, and the body of the guide shall become as if lighted from within with a blue, dazzling light.
Verse 7. And a radiant beam of brilliant white light shall come from the heart of the guide, and the light shall blind you, and it shall strike you in your heart. And with that white light, which dissolves anger and hatred, there shall also be a soft, smoky gray light coming from the world of hell.
Verse 8, and if you become angry or afraid, you will want to hide from the brilliant white light, and it will anger you with its brilliance, and it will expose you in your fear and anger.
Verse 9. And you will wish to seek refuge in the soft, smoky light of the hell world. Now you must have faith in the bright white light, which is the light of salvation for you.
Verse 10. And it is the grace of the Lord in loving wisdom that the light bathes you in its cleansing rays. And he that bathes in it and rejoices in it is perfected of his existence. And he is made free of sin, and he shall enter into the kingdom.
Verse 11, and be aware of the dull, smoky light from the world of hell. And if it catches you and pulls you down, you are destined to be born in the world of hell, and you shall endure unbearable tortures and suffering. And for he who is drawn down, there may be no escape. And if you now become angered or fearful, you will be drawn down, and you will not be free in the world of hell, nor is there salvation in the world of hell.
Verse 12. And you ought now to concentrate upon the brilliant white light, and thus you ought now to pray with me.
Verse 13. Alas, when wandering in the world through the power of violent anger and fear, on the path of radiance of the mirror of wisdom and light, may I be led by the guide of the transit world.
Verse 14. And may the divine Lord be my protector. And may I be safely brought across the danger of the world of transit. Now may I be placed in the state of the pure, shining void.
Verse 15.
verse 15. And he that prays in this way with humility and faith in the divine love, he shall merge in rainbow light with the heart of reality and attain complete union with the absolute truth. This completes this reading of the fifth book of the dead, called the Book of As-Salaam.
We're going to take a minute and change the setup.
As-Salaam, the peace, the source of peace and safety. It's important for us to remember that these names are outward signs of the inner sanctuary. I would like to speak briefly to you about Rebbe Soloveitchik. He was a friend and companion to E.J. Gold, Timothy Leary, Thomas Merton. And I had the opportunity to study briefly with him. He was known to many of the members of this community as the Heart Master. It is from him that I learned, I experienced the power of prayer. And one of the things that he said that I meant to prayer is love in motion. Said that for many of us, we've forgotten, and I had the opportunity to prayer and motion. He was known even Jews need, but now pray like Protestants. They have a heart and master. Covenant is a form of
it's
motion.
It's from him that I learned, I experienced our...
Just a little brief teaching about prayer from him, and then I'm going to share prayer and motion that he shared.
He said that for many of us, we've forgotten
this reference on that aspect of prayer. Many of us think of prayer as a religious duty.
Even Jews, he said, now
some take this seriously, moving smoothly through.
Is a form of emotion, a form of worship.
Others draw the line at an hour too. Synagogue on high holy days. Most approaches have lost contact with the original prayer
urge.
That irrepressible urge of gratitude, crushing hopelessness that
includes
the idea that we ourselves might stand before God
the
but our souls accept only one outcome when it comes to
prayer.
We do not wish just to spin our mental wheel. We want to be changed. We want to be moved. We want to end up in a better place than when we
started.
Souls yearn for this. If we do not really mean the words we say, how can we hope? If we really mean the words we say, that's why dominating takes us on a journey. There's emotion for
us. For
example, this is true, especially in our morning.
We want to end up in a better place.
Rabbis imagine this starting the moment we swing our feet over the side of the bed. We may wake up stiff, muffled, bleary-eyed. We might feel cranky and old, already dreading the task we have
to do. How can we not but be moved?
The invitation to prayer says, come, come as
ocean towards God.
We start slowly.
For example, this is true especially in our morning prayer.
And return in a better frame of mind.
The rabbis imagine the starting of the
prayer
morning.
Properly and truly
done.
Ready to
we might feel cranky
and ready.
Already dressing the task we have to
do. So I'd like to share with you a song
as you are
prayer that you shared with us.
Rise and go to
God. Be done as
in a better frame of mind.
Going to sing it through once.
Ready to
be my Patricia will
everyone.
Join us and hopefully
everyone
will join on the second verse. And then the third time around, I'm going to show you the movements that he used. Because it was very important to me to bring movement and prayer on to the book of Al-Salam because the meaning of Al-Salam is a greeting, similar to passing of the peace or namaste. In Islamic tradition, placing the right hand, forehead, and the mouth.
And then the third time around,
so this felt very much in tune with this book. There's the song. He changed it. Those who were also
the book of Al-Salam, because the meaning of Al-Salam is a greeting.
May the blessing of love rest upon you. May its peace abide with you. May its presence illuminate your heart now and forevermore. May the blessings of love rest upon you. May it feel alive with you. May it
speakers on the computer off, please.
Well, I said we would, and we did invoke Zalman. Thank you, Zalman, as always, for your wonderful gifts of wisdom. Verse 15 of the fifth book of the dead. And he that prays in this way with humility and faith in the divine love. This is an instruction that includes a method. The instructions that occur in the books of the dead tell us that they are the instructions, but frequently it's not exactly clear what we're supposed to do. In this case, in my opinion, the 15th verse states clearly exactly what you need to do in order to merge in rainbow light and attain complete union. Now, there will be a little piece of this puzzle after I have finished my piece that will come from Benny Bodo about how the Divine Lord and Divine Love are in this section of the passage through the voyage of the macro dimensions, and how that's an element that we need to investigate. And I'll leave him to it. But I would like to address the issue of prayer, faith, and humility. And my reference for this, once again, is The Great Adventure. The Great Adventure, for those of you who do not know, is a text of several talks of the month that had previously been issued in a small mailing edition, and they were combined in 2001 to become a book. And the reason why they were combined is so that there could be a continuous train of thought around the theme of the bardos and transit and death. So the one that I'm referring to this evening is called The Deathbed Perspective. And the section that I'm going to read to you about begins on page 2. Everything comes to nothing in this world. If your body is going to die anyway, and it certainly is, then your attention can lift now from the body and the things of the body, the material, mental, and emotional possessions, and is free to then settle itself onto what can be accomplished that's of any value. Remember, the point is not to survive linearly in the temporal sense, but perpendicularly to that in the eternal. But survival for its own sake is meaningless. We are trying to make our lives worthwhile. And in a sense, our survival becomes important only when it is for the sake of the work. Many terminal patients I have spoken with, especially those who have had some acquaintance with the ideas, understand very well their lives were only worth those moments when they were breathing in the essential self, breathing with God, loving and being loved, not loving people and being loved in return by them. Love really has nothing to do with people. People are incapable of love. They call love is really craving. feeling of warmth, security, lust, satisfaction, self-recognition, mirror image identity, only the essential self in love. And love never carries an object. It never refers to anything specific. What really counts in life are the few moments of consciousness by which we pay God for our existence. And this is terribly clear to those who lie in their last bed by bringing or allowing the machine to come into the waking state, even if just a little, and by accepting the breath of God, allowing it to repose, and to excite that pain. We describe it. We are able to pay back for our existence. So once again, in reference to verse 15, and he that prays in this way with humility and faith in the divine love, I say the act of prayer is our life, and the act of prayer as a life with humility and faith means allowing the essential self to be in union with the absolute in the heart of reality and merging with the rainbow light. And I'll turn it over now to Benny Bodo.
Thank you very much, Pat. And thank you very much, Tamara and Pat, for that beautiful song and the movements that went along with it. And I think that that is really showing what we're talking about in a heartfelt way, in a very beautiful way. And what when we were reading through the book as a group, and we came to the toward the end of the verses in the book, we saw the introduction of the concept of what could be called devotion, because there we talk about divine Lord, we talk about divine love. And so this chapter sent me on a little bit of an exploration in several of the books that I have here, and other places actually too, on what could be called devotion. What does devotion actually mean? And how do we mean it when we're talking about the end of life and when we're talking about going through these various chambers? And in Aslam, we're introduced to the element of the white radiations. We see the concept of pure form. And we hear for the first time about the divine Lord and divine love. And the thought came up that the introduction of the element of pure form would bring about this concept of duality, so that there could then be a divine Lord and divine love, because there could then be something other. And so something about that concept is then brought in to be very helpful to us in that chamber. And we're introduced to praying and humility and faith, and things that probably some of us, maybe many of us, and certainly I, don't feel like we're a natural part of my life. Devotion doesn't feel like it was a cultural part of my growing up or anything. But when I really look at what is said in the text, where it says, quote, praying for consciousness of the clear light, this starts to sound a little bit different than standard devotion. because this is the Clear Light Gospel Church, and this is a prayer for an enablement or ability. It's not a passive prayer. It isn't outside of us or other. So we're not saying, oh Lord, please send me $5,000 in unmarked small bills. We're saying, oh Lord, please help me to get my act together so I can learn how to become an expert safecracker. And this is kind of a big difference, and it's something revealing. If we look closely at the word, okay, so this is actually where I started to look at other texts. And if we look closely at the word commonly translated as prayer in Tibetan, it literally means wish path. So we're getting into a little bit of a difference in what we would call prayer. In the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the translation by Francesca Fremantle and Chogyam Trungpa. Is everything Grant? Okay? Yes.
Was that wish path?
Wish path. P-A-T-H.
Wish path. Thank you.
W-I-S-H-P-A-T-H.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Trungpa and Francesca Fremantle go on to say, it is not a request to an external deity, but a method of purifying and directing the mind. It acts as inspiration by arousing the mind's inherent desire for good, which attracts the fulfillment of its aim. So again, that's in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, Trungpa and Francesca Fremantle, page 95. An excellent book, if I may say. I recommend it. So, looking a little bit further at the word prayer and the way that it's used, particularly in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we would have to say that the true secret why devotion works and what it does in the way that it is used here is that it elevates the mind stream. When we're dying, we're going to be pretty darn interested in trying to get our distractible minds to a place where we can recognize and rest in the clear light, which is naturally occurring at this time. Remember, the clear light is our natural state, and it shows up without effort when we die. But due to pain or emotions, we might still get distracted and not recognize it, which seems very plausible because that's the kind of thing that happens to us every day. But that's a whole different subject. And be that as it may, we are given a remedy for the distracted mind, and that remedy is devotion. There is another point here, and that is that we are given a little bit of extra help, which is mentioned in the text. And that is that by showing one point of devotion to the teacher, there is a blessing that enters the equation. In other words, we are responsible. You are responsible. You are doing all the work. You are the one who's waking up. The teacher can't do that for you, but he or she can offer a blessing to your efforts. It's mentioned in many Buddhist texts that with prayer, which they often call supplication, one's mind stream joins that of the teacher, as you will hear in the following passage. Now this comes with page 85 in a book called The Bardo Guidebook by Chöki Nyingma Rinpoche. Last paragraph, page 85. This practice of mingling the mind of the teacher with one's own has a profound purpose. The mind of a qualified master abides uninterruptedly in the non-conceptual state of wakefulness that is naturally endowed with great compassion. With the openness of faith, make this supplication. May the realized mind of all the Buddhas and the mind of my teacher right now clear away the disturbing emotions concealing my nature. Having made such a supplication from the core of your heart, you can certainly attain some degree of realization. This is due to the connection between the blessings of the Master's enlightened mind, your own openness of faith, and the truth of Dharmata, which is the natural state of wakefulness. Okay. I have quite a bit more on this, but I think that right now that might be a good place to break. Because I
Thank
see that
you.
We're coming, we're coming about 22. And so we'll leave it at that for right now, and possibly more later on.
Yes, we're referring to the more for later on part of the Devotion for Dummies dumb book, right? Tianzhou, we're waiting for you. Have you quit sneezing?
Oh, then I don't think it was me sneezing, but it was a wonderful presentation we just heard. I'd like to first thank all of my teammates for their thoughtful and very heartfelt presentations, and it is my hope that the following offering will also be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Verse 11. And beware of the dull, smoky light from the world of hell. And if it catches you and pulls you down, you are destined to be born in the world of hell. And you shall endure unbearable tortures and suffering. And for he who is drawn down, there may be no escape. And if you now become angered or fearful, you will be drawn down, and you will not be free in the world of hell, nor is there salvation in the world of hell. This is a very disquieting passage, at least it was to me, particularly in view of what we have just read in verse 2 of this book. Quote, I have none to oppose me, not even an absolute evil. So we may ask, which is it? Is it the divine love of Asalam, the reality of, if God be with us, I have none to oppose me, not even an absolute evil? Or is it that we could be stuck forever in unbearable suffering and torture without any hope of salvation? How is it that we can find these two inconsistent and even contradictory passages so close together in the same book? Perhaps the author has provided us with more than a few hints to point to what this observer believes could be one answer. Note that the text says, and if it catches you, and for he who is drawn down, there may be no escape. The operative words here are if and may. The word if is even used once more in this verse where we read, if you become angered or fearful, etc. These words are conditional qualifiers, so upon whom or what then do they depend? The answer is, They depend entirely upon us and what we project. This is certainly not a new idea, but a recurrent one. We have seen it throughout this text, as well as the ADD itself, in every book and in nearly every chamber. So what is the author trying to tell us? Our only reality is the clear light, the luminous light of the void which we are. It is the clear and perfect reflection of our own spiritual nature. Everything else is only a dance of light, the play of our own consciousness, the demons and angels we ourselves project into a creation that is actually a frozen tableau, a world that has already happened. So, when we recognize that hell's or heavens, we get to try all of them, are of our own making, we also discover, to our surprise, that we do what we have always done all along. We give ourselves a second chance. Of course, this doesn't mean that when we periodically break the hypnotic spell of our own creation, the going gets easy. Such is the life of a sleeping machine, since bad habits, as we all know, have considerable inertia. The point here is, when we are identified with our demons, we are truly in hell. And when in this space, we cannot see any hope whatsoever. This observer has worked with many patients who believe that their lives were completely hopeless, that they were helpless or powerless to change or even unworthy to be here. Those who have experienced depression know how this feels firsthand. The word unpleasant doesn't even come close. When you believe you are in hell, you are in hell, and there is no way out. Perhaps this is why the text says there is no salvation, because in this state, we do not yet know how to give it to ourselves. Perhaps an even more accurate way to say this is, we do not yet know how to accept what we have already given to ourselves. This segues into the next verse, which again gives us the remedy. Verse 12, and you ought now to concentrate upon the brilliant white light, and thus you ought now to pray with me. The remedy or reminder here is to again concentrate upon the brilliant white light. If during our earthly sojourn we have regularly practiced methods that bring us face to face with the clear light, as the teaching advises us to do, we will be far better prepared during our own transition to recognize the macro-dimensional domains of the labyrinth and to enter them gently if we choose. We are fortunate in that our school teaches many such methods, allowing each voyager to select his or her own way to practice. All religions teach these kinds of methods in one form or another, as do other fourth-way schools, many forms of yoga, and various forms of Sufism and Kabbalah. Some New Age schools and individual teachers of more recent vintage offer methods to reach this goal as well. And of course, some people, Pratika Buddhas, figure it out all by themselves. The second and last sentence in this verse invites us to join with Asalam in a prayer that can help us accomplish the same thing, a safe journey through the sudden ambushes of the labyrinth and total absorption into the brilliant white light. I'd like to close with an additional recurrent theme. We've already discovered several of them in our current text. Here is one more that may warrant our attention at this point in our studies. The author always asks us to go into the bright lights, the reality most uncomfortable, and to avoid the soft, welcoming lights, the paths of escape. This advisory is not limited to the Bardo states while in transit, but to everyday life in the machine as well. In this regard, it is interesting to note that recent research into the effectiveness of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, MBCT, has shown the value of staying with negative internal states long enough to pass what is called an extinction burst. This is based on the observation that negative, unpleasant states rarely last more than 90 seconds. You may Google Mindfulness Research Monthly to get more information on this if you wish. If the individual so suffering from these states can stay with them until after it gets worse, which may take 90 seconds plus or minus, the feeling will spontaneously dissolve. But this is not what people ordinarily do. They instead escape by taking a drug of choice, eating something, literally running away, or quickly changing the subject. Doing this negatively reinforces the escape behavior, thereby inadvertently contributing to the person's future suffering, because the aversive stimulus remains. So it seems that the advice EJ gave us 40 years ago is spot on the thing to do as demonstrated by modern psychological research. And if we stay with what is uncomfortable and not try to escape, we may be in for a pleasant surprise. Maybe now we have a way to make our butterflies of uncertainty fly in formation for a change. And we don't have to wait for very long. Perhaps we may have found a new essence habit. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry.
Harry, that was beautiful.
Thank you, Harry.
Yeah, the whole idea of kind of being trapped in our own hell world. I think the first time, I'll be brief, the first time I really had an experience of transcending the normal thoughts about God and the devil was when I saw someone had written in the bathroom at the New School of Social Research on the bathroom wall, "There is no devil, there's just God on a drunk." And so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Butterflies in formation.
You asked me to use that, so I kind of jerry-rigged it in there.
You did. Thank you so much. I would like to have Laura 34 close our presentation tonight. And for those of you who are not familiar with the text that holds prayer absolute, that would be The Hidden Work is the text. And if you haven't had a chance before now, well, now's your chance.
Prayer absolute contemplation. In motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. and I have a short commentary on this that may or may not be helpful, but my commentary is this, that we are in a constant replay of our previous paths through the bardos. Thus we have the splendid opportunity to work on this replay and our many other incarnations here and now, constantly making efforts to gain presence and attention, as Prayer Absolute indicates over and over. And I'm going to reiterate for you for your elucidation on this. One, my presence comes to thee. Two, my presence awakens to thee. Three, my presence comes to know thee. Four, my presence becomes aware of thee. Five, my presence wishes to comfort thee. Six, my presence serves thee. Seven, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. Eight, my presence is a comfort to thee. Nine, my presence becomes thee. Also, verse 15, I believe, is a prescription for relief for all chambers, faith, humility, and divine love. Thank you all.
Wow.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Very, 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 very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Laura 34, thank you so much for...
Thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing life to that prayer. That first line, I thought I remembered it as learning it as emotion bowing, my presence comes today. And that's what tied me into the davening of prayer.
Yes, I hope I said that. That is true. In motion bowing, my presence comes to be.
Mm-hmm.
And davening is, Marvette, you're absolutely correct. We did learn to, I believe it was a Church Street. Not Church Street. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We learned in the chapel there how to strike our chest in the heart, and we also struck our heads gently, and we did daven with that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that up.
Good.
That's a good memory. Thank you. That embodied something very strong. Thank you very much. Embodied, yes, you become embodied through prayer. I want to thank the group of Book 5, and also I appreciate all of the participants with your attention and your interest, and especially your care this evening. Thank you. It just feels very strong here. It's a wonderful space. Thank everybody for being here. May this be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere, and for the benefit of the Absolute. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks.
And so thank you for coming tonight, and that'll conclude our presentation for this evening, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Good night. Harry.